Certainly. We're happy that you're here this morning to gather together to study another portion of God's will. We're very happy to have those that are visiting with us again today. We appreciate you coming and being with us. We would invite you to linger around for a little bit after the services that some of the folks here in the front can move to the back and get a little bit better acquainted with you, and hopefully that'll be the case. We appreciate you coming out and being here today. As Norman read the note about Kyle, for those that weren't here when the announcements were made, this is Kyle and Jackson and Addie's last day with us. I have known Kyle for about 23 years now. I baptized Kyle about that time period, about 23 years ago I baptized him, and I've known his family for a good long while. His mom and dad are here today, as well as his sister. They can be very, very proud. A godly family, and they are blessed in so many ways. And we just appreciate Kyle and everything that he's done here for the cause of Christ over the past few years. And certainly we're going to miss him. We would invite you today to follow along with us. Today we want to talk on the subject fasting. Several people have asked me about this in the past. Seems like after maybe 4,000, over 4,000 sermons and classes here, seems like I would have covered this once or twice, but maybe I haven't. But we're going to go back and we're going to talk about this again today. So we'd invite you to follow along on the charts behind us. It's going to be a very simple lesson this morning for you to follow. And we're going to draw some passages out of the Old Testament and New Testament and hopefully draw some conclusions regarding this. Normally, when we think about fasting, we don't think about this usually with Christians. Usually with Christians, we're usually thinking about potlucks or pitch-ins or things like that. And normally, we're not thinking about fasting. And I'm sure this morning, for the most part, you're not thinking about fasting. You're thinking about eating within the next few hours. But we want to look at this today and see what the Bible has to say concerning fasting. We'll go to Mark chapter 2, first of all. And look at the passage there. Mark chapter 2. Off the screen. Let me get that on the screen. Mark chapter 2, verses 18 through 20. Verse 18, the disciples of John and the Pharisees were fasting. Then they came and said to him, "Why do the disciples of John and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" But Jesus said to them, "Can the friends of the bridegroom fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and they will fast in those days." I suppose the first thing we could do is just look at a couple of statement of facts here regarding this in this context to see what it says. Hopefully we can draw a couple of conclusions from this. First of all, it states here evidently that the disciples of John and the Pharisees fasted. In fact, you go over to Luke chapter 18. Luke chapter 18 and the story, the context of the Pharisee and the publican. Says in verse 9, beginning, then he said, told this parable to some people who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. Verse 10, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and was praying thus to himself, God, I thank that I'm not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. And here's what I want you to see. It says in verse 12, it says, I fast twice a week. That's quite a bit. That's 104 times a year from a few years of a Durant High School education, I guess. That's 104 times a year. But he fasted twice a week. There's something else that we see here regarding this. And that is that the disciples of John the Baptist fasted. And Matthew, and in chapter 9 and in verse 14. Matthew chapter 9 and in verse 14. It says in verse 14, the disciples of John came to him asking, why do we and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast? So, I take it they are fasting. I don't know if they're fasting twice a week or not, but it seems like we can draw a conclusion that they are fasting. Then in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 16, Matthew chapter 6 and verse 16, he had stated over here in verse 20, but the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and they will fast in those days. So it seems like there's going to come a time when the followers of Jesus Christ are going to fast. I think we can draw a conclusion from that. In fact, in Matthew and in chapter 6 and verse 16, Matthew 6, verse 16, in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, he says, whenever you fast, do not put on a gloomy face as the hypocrites do, for they neglect their appearance so that they will be noticed by men when they are fasting. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. So there's three facts about fasting, first of all, at least from this passage, and that is the Pharisees and disciples, they fasted. It seems like the disciples of John the Baptist, they fasted. And it seems like at some point in time, whenever this is, that Jesus' disciples were going to fast as well. I had preached a sermon a couple of weeks ago on the church at Antioch over in Acts chapter 13, one of the three places mentioned about Paul leaving from Antioch. Back to the text again in Acts chapter 13 and verse 1 beginning. As I told you a couple of weeks ago, the church at Antioch was made up of different races of people. There were at Antioch, the church that was there, prophets and teachers. There's Barnabas. There is Simeon, who is called Niger. He's African American. There's Lucius of Cyrene, Gentile. There is Manaen, who was brought up with Herod, the Tetrarch. He is royalty. So, again, we see different people that make up this church, but that's not what we're dealing with today. It says in verse 2, while they were ministering to the Lord and fasting, there's what I want you to see. Fasting, the Holy Spirit said, set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work which I called them. And when they had fasted and prayed, They laid hands on them and they sent them away. So I just want you to see the early church, for whatever reason, was involved in fasting. So now let's go to the Old Testament first of all, then we'll go to the New Testament, and the rest will be yours for today. So we try to understand fasting. First of all, in the Old Testament, usually when we think of fasting, and this is true, usually we're thinking about a total abstinence of food. We see over in the book of Esther chapter 4 and in verse 16. Esther chapter 4 and in verse 16. It says in verse 16, "Go assemble all the Jews who were found in Susa and fast for me." There was a collective group of people there that fasted for a period of time. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, day and night. I and my maidens will also fast in the same way. Thus I will go in to the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. The example of whether the king is going to extend the scepter to Esther or not at that point in time. But they wanted the Jews to fast. And there was an abstaining from food for 3 days and for 3 nights. There is an exception to this, it seems like, over in the book of Daniel. In the book of Daniel and in chapter 10, where it seems like he didn't totally abstain from food, but he abstained from many of the delicacies of that day. In Daniel and in chapter 10 in verses 2 and 3, Daniel 10 in verses 2 and 3, it says, "In those days Daniel had been mourning for 3 entire weeks, and he did not eat any tasty food, nor did he eat any meat or wine that entered his mouth, nor did he use any ointment until all the entire 3 weeks had been completed." Probably the most popular out of all these is found in Luke and in chapter 4 and in verse 2. Luke chapter 4 and in verse 2. Luke chapter 4 and verse 2, it says, "Concerning the temptation of Jesus, for 40 days, being tempted by the devil, he ate nothing during those days. And when they had ended, he became hungry." He fasted. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. Over in Ezra and in chapter 10. Ezra chapter 10 and in verse 6. Ezra 10 verse 6. It says, "And Ezra arose before the house of God." In the middle part of the verse it says, "Although he went there, he did not eat bread or drink water, for he was mourning over the unfaithfulness of the exiles." So we see a reason there. We see a reason there why fasting occurs. And why Ezra was fasting at that time, because he was mourning over the unfaithfulness of the exiles. It seems like there's one time that fasting is commanded within the Old Testament, and that is on the Day of Atonement in Leviticus chapter 23 and in verse 27. Leviticus 23 and in verse 27. Leviticus 23 and in verse 27. It says in verse 27, Leviticus 23, "On exactly the 10th day of the 7th month is the Day of Atonement. And it shall be a holy convocation to you, and you shall humble your souls and present an offering by fire to the Lord. In some of the older versions, it talks about there is an affliction during that time. Now, Isaiah tends to answer that over in Isaiah chapter 58 and in verse 5. Isaiah 58 and in verse 5. In Isaiah 58 and in verse 5, says in verse 5, is it a fast like this, which I choose, a day for a man to humble himself? Is it for bowing one's head like a reed, or for spreading out sackcloth and ashes as a bed? And you shall call this a fast, even an acceptable day to the Lord. So we see that's the one time that the command is given to fast on the Day of Atonement. We also see that it is a time of mourning or an expression of grief. Over in Zechariah chapter 8, Zechariah chapter 8, this is the very end of the Old Testament, right before Malachi. Zechariah chapter 8 and in verse 19. They are mourning over being in Babylonian captivity. And in verse 19, it's interesting. It says, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the fast of the fourth, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh, the fast of the tenth month will become joy, gladness, cheerful feast for the house of Judah. So love, truth, and peace. So it doesn't seem like there's command here, but it seems like that God grants them permission to go ahead and to fast. To fast on the fourth, the fifth, the seventh, and the tenth months. And Daniel, and in chapter 10, Daniel chapter 10, and in verse 2, Daniel chapter 10 and in verse 2, again back to Daniel. In those days I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 entire weeks. Now I guess right here we get to the point where we ask the question, what is the result of this? Why does this occur? I take that we read this, or what we've read thus far, that either a national calamity is going to occur, like with Esther, the Jews in their entirety are going to be put to death by Haman, built the gallows 7.5 stories high, that a national calamity is going to occur, or there is going to be a personal crisis within a person's life. And that seems to be part of the reason for fasting, at least what we see thus far. It's either a national calamity or a personal crisis that occurs within a person's life. And we understand that when these two things occur normally, it seems like normally there is a natural loss of appetite. I can remember years ago when 9/11 occurred, and that night a lot of us got together at someone's home. Now, normally when we go to someone's home, we pack up just a lot of food like we do on a Friday night Bible class. We pack up a lot of food and take it to somebody's home.
and they were going to enjoy eating. But I remember September the 11th when we went that Tuesday night to Sarah and Nathan's house, there was no food there. Nobody desired food that night. We were praying for ourselves. We were praying for our nation. We were praying to God to help us through this issue that we were dealing with at that time. We didn't desire any food that night. So I could see where a national calamity would occur. And people would fast. And of course, a personal crisis, the greatest personal crisis, is that of tragedy for a person. You know, either their family member is in the hospital and people are bringing in food and they try to get somebody to eat something while their loved one is back there in surgery and they say, no, I'm not able to eat anything at this time, or maybe in a funeral home, to where in this culture, in this area still, we pack in a lot of food into the funeral home every time. But still, people don't have that much of a desire to eat. So I could see where that occurs. There's something else that I want you to see here as well. And that is, occasionally, a fast is collective. In Nehemiah chapter 9 and in verse 1. Nehemiah chapter 9 and in verse 1. It says, on the 24th day of this month, the sons of Israel assembled with fasting and sackcloth and dirt upon them. They were getting ready to confess their sins. But also there is the private fasting. When Nehemiah found out what was occurring back in Jerusalem, in chapter 1 of Nehemiah and in verse 4 it says, when I heard these words, I sat down, I wept, and I mourned for days, and I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. So we understand there is a time for fasting. Over in 2 Samuel chapter 3 and in verse 35, we won't turn there because I'm running out of time. But David, when Abner died, David fasted for a period of time. Now let me take you to the New Testament rather quickly, and then the lesson will be yours. One of the first things you see in the New Testament is the Jews continue to observe the fast, the Day of Atonement. In Acts chapter 27, and in verse 9, Acts 27 and verse 9. It says, when considerable time had passed and the voyage was now dangerous, since even the fast was already over, that being the Day of Atonement, Paul began to admonish them. Now the reason I put this up here is because the Jews were still observing the fast. Christians were not. This had been hung to the cross. And what this is here, this passage, what they are dealing with here is, he is identifying, I think Luke is identifying here, a time of year. He's trying to put a time period on this here. He's not saying that all Christians are involved in this fast here, the Day of Atonement. He's just saying that there is a certain time period here, and this is what we're looking at right here. Also, the most well-known fast again, back to Matthew chapter 4. Not only Luke chapter 4, but Matthew chapter 4 as well. It says, Jesus tempted in the wilderness, verse 2, and after he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he became hungry. Now you can notice Leviticus 34, and in verse 28, Moses does the same thing. Exodus 34, and in verse 28, it says concerning Moses, so he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights, and he did not eat bread nor drink water, and he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments.
But the thing I want you to see here is, Jesus said, when you fast, there's going to come a time when you might feel that you need to fast. Jesus expected disciples would fast. Now, I don't believe this is a command. I believe this is Jesus granting permission for a person to do so. I don't think myself and Bob and Norman, as the elders of this congregation, I don't think we can lay down within the Word of God a command saying, on the first day of every month, everyone here needs to fast. I think that's going beyond our scope as elders of this congregation. But I do believe that Jesus grants permission to anyone who chooses to fast, that they can fast. The second thing I want you to see here is, if you do fast, you need to have a reason for fasting. In Mark and in chapter 2 and in verse 20. Mark chapter 2 and in verse 20. Mark chapter 2 verse 20. But the days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them. The days come when Jesus is going to be crucified. He's not going to be with you. And at that period in time, there is a calamity in your life. For a certain amount of time, disciples, a certain amount of time, apostles, there's going to be a calamity within your life, and there is a reason why you need to be fasting. And I think the same is true for us as well. It's a natural progression of grief, as I stated a few moments ago. Whether it's a personal crisis or a national calamity, or whatever it is, there is a reason for you to fast. But if you fast, he says, to do it in secret. Don't let anybody know that you're doing it. It's not something it seems like that you flaunt. It's something that's very private in the lives of every individual Christian. In Matthew chapter 6 and in verse 18, Matthew 6 verse 18, as he is dealing with the subject of fasting from verse 16 down to verse 18, he says, so that your fasting will not be noticed by men, but your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So it seems like that this should be done in secret. If I fast, I do so to God. In Romans chapter 14, and many times there's a lot of things said about Romans chapter 14, but we just want to look at verse 6. And just to look at the principle of verse 6. It says in verse 6, and he who observes the day observes it for the Lord. He who eats does so for the Lord. He who gives thanks to God, and he who eats not, for the Lord, he does not eat and gives thanks to God. If I fast, I devote myself to God. If I choose not to fast, it's my choice. If I choose not to fast, I still devote myself to God.
One other passage here and the lesson will be yours. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and in verse 8. 1 Corinthians 8 and in verse 8. If you fast, this will not make you a superior Christian. Again, look at the principle of 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 8. It says, but food will not condemn us to God, for we are neither the worse if we do not eat, nor the better if we do eat. If I fast, will this make me a greater Christian than you because you choose not to fast? No. I'm still devoting myself to God. You're still devoting yourself to God. Well, thank you for your attention. My time is up for today. And it's a little simple lesson, regarding fasting. But you might be in the audience today, not a Christian. What I said here, this is not a command, but God grants this as a permission to anyone who wants to do it. Your soul is at stake this morning. We're not talking about not only granting permission, but we're talking about a command from God that you be baptized into Christ. And you might be in the audience this morning to where you haven't been baptized into Christ as of yet. To where you've reached the age of accountability, you know right from wrong. We have gone through the steps of salvation many, many times before. And you've reached the conclusion that you need to be baptized into Christ. Or for those that need to come back to their first love, that second law of pardon, you have the opportunity now, a command from God again, to do so. While together we stand, we sing.